This is my high school in Bluefield. It's a class reunion.
It's your 50th high school class reunion.
Yes. I'm in the corner here.
Yeah, how wonderful.
The man in the corner is John Forbes Nash Jr., one of the greatest mathematicians of the 20th century.
This is a picture of the high school building. Beaver High School. There's another high school now. This has not
We're in his office on the ninth floor of Fine Hall, the math building at Princeton University, a place some people call the mathematical center of the universe.
What is this?
An aerial picture of Bluefield. This is the nearby mountain. It's called East River Mountain. On the other side is Virginia. These clouds are pouring over from Virginia. But that is really to the east.
It almost looks like the sea pouring over into Bluefield, West Virginia, doesn't it?
And
one whole bookshelf in Nash's office is lined with photos of Bluefield, West Virginia. Now 84, John Nash left the state more than 60 years ago. But clearly, it's still important to him.
The Greater Bluefield Chamber of Commerce honors Dr. John F. Nash, Jr. for his contribution in the field of mathematics.
I just was visiting.
Over his lifetime, John Nash has sought out and solved some of mathematics' most difficult problems. And he solved them in ways that amazed other mathematicians, but not without great trials to overcome. In 2001, Ron Howard made a film about Nash called A Beautiful Mind, starring Russell Crowe. It won the Oscar for Best Picture and many other awards. The film and the book on which the film is based tell the story of Nash's meteoric rise in the mathematical world, his early career teaching at MIT, his sudden descent into severe mental illness, and ultimately his recovery from that illness. But John Nash's story begins in Bluefield, West Virginia, in Mercer County.
My mother had been born there, and she had sisters. Two of the sisters lived there and had children, and those were my cousins, and I was closer to them than other people. I had only one sibling, my sister. It's a special relationship.
I loved the mountains.
Martha Nash Legg remembers Bluefield as a nice place to grow up.
There was plenty of business going on. We had a wonderful neighborhood, children played. My parents had an active social life. We were reasonably well off, but not wealthy like some of our neighbors who were coal operators, who were extremely wealthy.
Tell me what John was like then.
Well, I guess today we'd call him nerdy. His friends were ones who also were bright. He liked science fiction. He was musical. Or he is musical to the extent that he can whistle Bach.
I was quite aware that I wasn't so close to other people that weren't related to me. I guess I'm a little like an Asperger's type.
So you found it difficult to make friends?
Well, not entirely difficult, but I didn't have very strong friendship relations generally. I wasn't just a buddy of the group.
Johnny Nash, as he was known then, came from an educated family. His father, John Nash Sr., moved to Bluefield from Texas to work as an electrical engineer for the Appalachian Electric Power Company. His mother taught high school English and Latin before she married. Even as a little boy, Johnny was drawn to mathematics.
I did have a taste for numbers. In school, I like to work with larger numbers than we were taught to use. To numbers of five digits rather than two or three.
Even back in grammar school, when the teacher told my mother that he didn't understand the math, and of course my mother told her that she knew he did, and he just did it differently. But I knew he was plenty smart. I would have math workbooks that I let get behind me. I had pages to do. If I needed to get that finished up, I got John. And we got that finished up in a hurry.
You talk about a book that you read that really influenced you.
Men of Mathematics by E.T. Bell, who's an American. It's entirely about European mathematicians over a certain period of history. But the book was somehow inspiring, the way it talked about the mathematical discoveries and what these people had done.
Nash was particularly intrigued by the 17th century French mathematician Pierre de Fermat. As a young teenager, John succeeded in proving Fermat's theorem.
It developed from a coincidence. It's something called the binomial theorem. And a generalization of that is a multinomial theorem. It followed from that generalization.
And you figured it out.
Yes, the binomial theorem says you have a plus b raised to the nth power, that this is, it can be expanded in a certain form. Or if you can have a plus b plus c raised to the nth power, then this expands in a certain form. Well, if n is a prime, then all of these terms are divisible by n, except for the a to the n plus b to the n plus c to the n. When you finally break a number down and A, B, C, D are 1, and then you get the number and everything else is divisible by the prime.
And that's how a 14-year-old proved Fermat's theorem. When he was still in high school, John helped his father solve a difficult problem at work. Together they developed a formula for calculating catenary curves, the sag between poles in electrical transmission lines. The formula is still used today across the United States and the world. Then John won a George Westinghouse scholarship to Carnegie Mellon University, then known as Carnegie Tech, in Pittsburgh. Originally, he planned to follow his father into engineering, but soon switched to mathematics. In 3 years, Nash earned both a bachelor's and master's degree in mathematics. People began to get an inkling of how brilliant this young man was.
I'm Steve Shreve. I'm the Orion Hoke Professor of Mathematical Sciences at Carnegie Mellon University. I grew up in Greenbrier County in West Virginia. When I came to Carnegie Mellon, which was 1980, there was Dick Duffin, who was John Nash's teacher when Nash was here in the late 40s. And Dick remembered him well. And one of Dick's favorite boasts was that he recognized that John Nash was a genius. He recognized it early. He encouraged him to go to Princeton for his PhD. And when Dick then was asked to write a letter of recommendation for John, Dick was fond of telling the story. He said it was the shortest letter he ever wrote. It was, "John Nash is a genius." And then he signed his name.
When he got to Princeton, Nash mixed with some of the world's leading mathematicians and scientists of the day, including Albert Einstein. Now, not many PhD students write a thesis that changes the world. But that's exactly what John Nash did. His dissertation was in a field called game theory, at the time a relatively new concept that explains human behavior. Nash's work in game theory was in non-cooperative games, where binding agreements aren't possible.
Suppose we had Target and Walmart, and they're thinking about pricing, say, a stroller.
Cliff Hawley, professor of economics at West Virginia University.
And they both choose low price. They have two choices, low price or high price. We would think about, say, Target choosing low price, and we would say, is this the best strategy for them, given that their competitor Walmart charges a low price? And it probably is, because if they went to a high price, Walmart would get all the market. Similarly, is this the best strategy for Walmart to have a low price? It probably is. If they went to high price, Target would get all the market.
This low price decision is an example of what later became known as the Nash equilibrium.
Because each player is doing the best he can given the behavior of the other rivals.
In the decades since Nash wrote his PhD thesis, the Nash equilibrium has been used in a wide variety of applications, from politics, foreign policy and diplomacy, to information technology, and even evolutionary biology. But while John Nash is most recognized today for his work in game theory, he also solved a few very, very difficult problems in pure mathematics. By doing so, he's inspired generations of young mathematicians, including Deon Slabchev, associate professor of mathematics at Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh.
One of the things that are really amazing about John Nash and that impressed people in my field, he would attack the most difficult questions in the field, spend a year working on them until he really cracked the problem. I mean, that's not really a sensible approach to a field, right? Usually you try to learn a lot, you try to talk with people, you make some small contribution, you understand something, then you contribute a little bit.
Not John Nash.
He was incredibly brave. He was audacious in trying the most difficult problems, working until he cracked them. So that's really absolutely amazing about him. And that's true not just for his contributions to differential equations, but also for the other work that he did.
Nash literally astounded the mathematical world with two short papers in differential geometry. But at the height of this brilliant mathematician's career, at age 30, John Nash developed paranoid schizophrenia, a severe mental illness. For more than 25 years, he had all kinds of delusions about who he was, who other people were, messages he was receiving. By this time, he had a wife and son. His wife divorced him, but later, when he had no other place to go, she took him into her home as a lodger. He wandered the campus of Princeton University, especially the library's under Fine Hall, the math building, whistling Bach to himself. People called him the Phantom of Fine Hall.
Go down to floor L, which is above the entrance level at this tower. Okay.
Professor Nash takes me down 10 flights to the Fine Hall Library underground. This library connects to a maze of underground libraries in the sciences.
Now we can walk to the left here.
Okay. We're still within Fine Hall, though, right?
Yes. Because of that, we'll be in the original math physics library.
Did you used to study in here or research in here?
I used to spend a good bit of time in here.
Did you spend time here when you were ill?
Yes. I was a person out of ordinary communications, more or less, but I would write things on blackboards sometimes, at least at first.
You spent a long period of your life in what you call delusional thinking, or what's called schizophrenia or paranoid schizophrenia, and then without medication, you started to get better. Tell me how that came about.
The return to sanity was a gradual process, but like I rejected listening to voices internally, I got to thinking about the phenomenon of voices as something that was simply a symptom, and I began intellectually realizing that I was creating the voices in a corner of my mind. I was talking to myself, but I at first thought that something, a message is like a telegram, a telephone call, that it seemed as if persons were communicating with me. But then that didn't get confirmed that there was anyone in particular, so I was able to put it aside after a while.
One morning in 1994, a few years after John Nash returned to what he calls rational thinking, an amazing thing happened. As John's sister, Martha Nash Legg, remembers.
I had gotten up and I was in the bathroom getting ready to go out with my dog. And the radio was on in the bedroom there. And I heard them say something about the Nobel Prize Award in economics. And I thought they said John Nash and game theory. I had no idea game theory had anything to do with economics. That's how much I knew about it. And brought tears to my eyes thinking how much my parents would have loved to have heard that.
After years of illness and unemployment, the Nobel Prize literally changed John Nash's life. Princeton University appointed him a senior research mathematician. Other awards and honors followed. In 2001, Nash remarried his wife Alicia, 38 years after their divorce. The man who was almost forgotten was invited to lecture at universities throughout the world.
Perhaps today, the thing to be most proud of it is that he did turn back to rational thinking. And that's a rather amazing thing. And that gives hope. That gives a lot of hope to people and to families who have felt like things are pretty hopeless. I don't know that it will work for everybody, but it does give hope.
For other mathematicians, John Nash's work is like great music or poetry, created by a beautiful mind. Deon Slabchev.
We sometimes like to hear new music. We want to hear new ideas. We want to see some new themes, new songs that excite us and so on. So similarly in mathematics, you want to see new ideas. And everyone has the same tools, right? And now you see someone having a new idea, seeing things in a different way, introducing a new object that suddenly makes everything clear. Nash's papers, they are very brief and have many ideas in them. You know, it's not just one idea that solves everything, but at every step there is a new idea, and yet there is the whole picture of how everything fits together, right? So that is the beauty of the thing. So it's clear that he was very ambitious, right? That he, you know, didn't settle for just a little thing. If you speak about the beautiful mind, then it must be the mind which is able to store so many new ideas together at the same time, right? Must be in some way beautiful.
Now, most people, of course, are retired by your age, but you're still working.
It's true, yes, yes. It's not unusual to work to 70, maybe 75, but now I'm 84. I could go to 90.